Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Christian has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore.
To go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Absolutely. We're in full-fledged playoff mode here.
We are.
And we finally got a it was kind of worrisome. I mean, we had sort of talked about, man, this has really not been a good playoff series or, good playoff season. But boy, did we get one, and we had to amend a list almost immediately. So we finished an episode, we posted it, and then a few days later, someone said, hey, by the way, you need to add this new game. And we agree. So that's what this is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much possibly the very likely the greatest first round game seven of all time. Maybe the, probably on the short list of greatest of all time happened a few days ago. The Spurs and the Clippers in Game 7, the 2015 first round, just, classic series all along. But this wasn't the only reason why we wanted to do this, because there's a few. In our last show, we did the we picked our top seven Game 7s of the first and second rounds. And it turns out there were a couple that we didn't mention that were important. A couple of them were copy and paste errors on my part. One was a scoring margin that was just a little bit high, so it was a little bit off my radar. But when we looked back, we decided, okay, yeah, this still needs to go, even though it didn't quite fit the initial list. So we're
right, and we asked for people to help us out too, and there were a few people that said, "Oh my God, you missed blank," and it's like, "Oh yeah we did." It's a matter of it. I mean, we tried to pick as many as possible. We sort of had an approach that we used, and something slipped through the cracks. Like one of the series we're going to talk about. Yeah, I mean, the scoring margin doesn't indicate that it was like an unbelievably great game, but it absolutely was. It just so happened that, at the end, it kind of had some distance. So that's what this is for, and that's going to happen. And we're glad that people gave us feedback and stuff. That means they're actually listening. So
yeah,
that's cool.
Exactly.
We're not just talking to ourselves, which I don't mind talking to you. It's fine. Yeah, but it's good that other people listen too. So right. I have no problem doing this. Once a week, just shooting the shit with you. That's fine. I'll do that.
Cool. Yay.
Why don't we release these things? Screw it. Let's just do our own thing. Yeah. Hi. How are you, Jason?
Celebration of friendship.
How's the daughter? How's your daughter?
She's good. She's great.
What were her thoughts on Spurs Clippers?
She didn't have them. She was she was at her grandma's visiting. So I got a chance to be alone by myself with my own thoughts, and just trying to watch some basketball, no interruptions. I love my daughter very much, but it's nice to have basketball all to yourself.
Yeah, when the dogs are away for the weekend or whatever, visiting and stuff. Yeah, I don't have. I live vicariously through dogs. It's the same thing where it's like, oh, good. I can watch wrestling and actually like focus this time without like every 10 minutes being like, all right, what are you doing? Like, come on, hey, come over here. Shut up. Stop. So it is very good. So, all right. So we'll have her watch it and have her come back next week for her thoughts.
Okay. Well, we will do that.
I would love to hear what she thinks.
Absolutely.
I will have my girlfriend watch it and then your daughter, and then they host the next show.
All right.
And they break it down in glaring details.
I'm sure that will work out very well.
I think your daughter's probably going to like it better than, or actually enjoy watching it more than my girlfriend.
Oh, but she's not a basketball fan?
I should say fiance. I'm kind of being a
jerk. Yeah, that's right.
Fiance,
yeah. But she's not a basketball fan then?
Oh, God, she hates
it. Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. So that's rough.
Well, to be fair, every time she watches it, and this game was interesting because we're watching this together. Every time she watched, for some reason, the game turns into overtime. Like, if she's there, it's going to be over. Because it's usually like, when is this game going to be over? And I'm like, oh, it's like 10 minutes or whatever. And I say that, and it's, 2 minutes left in the game or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be 10 minutes. I'm being realistic. I'm not doing the old, like, oh, it'll be over in 2:15 or whatever. Like, that never happens.
Sure,
but so I did that. And every time I do that, it goes to overtime. And then this particular time, it's like, in this game, it's neck and neck. It's back and forth. It's tied with, however many seconds left. And she's just looking at me because we're supposed to go somewhere or do something. I'm like, no, I like, we'll see. And then Chris Paul hit the shot, and I was like, okay, good, great. I'm off the hook. So thank you, Chris Paul.
Yes. But thank you for many things, but yes, thank you for not.
The best was when we had to go somewhere. And there was that Bulls Brooklyn Nets like three overtime game, and I'm like, okay, these never happen. I was like, this thing is not going to double OT, and it goes double OT. I'm like, there's no way it's going to go to three overtimes, Michelle. That never happens. Whoops. So that ruined her because that was pretty early in the relationship. I think
that makes
sense. That was kind of like the, oh, is this what basketball is? I'm like, no, I swear.
Just a second, Jack.
Oh no,
what
problem.
Do you want?
See.
Mine's
uninterrupted dog.
He just wants to be petted. So
that's fine. Mine is wrestling on my leg. Yeah,
he misses Elissa very much, or he misses Elissa very much. So she's been gone for almost a week. So.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, you're an empty nester all the way.
Yeah,
then.
I know. Yeah, I'm going to San Francisco with her. In a couple of days. But anyway, so back to the show.
Have you bought your Warriors playoff tickets yet?
Yeah, I think that's gonna. I'm gonna be priced.
It's out of the budget.
Yeah,
okay. All right. Happen, so. Fair enough.
So our first oversight is from 1974, the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons in the Western Conference playoffs. It was 96-94. The Pistons were led by Bob Lanier, Dave Bing, and the immortal Stu Lance, who I'd never heard of before and didn't really necessarily have that much of a memorable career, but he was the leading scorer for the Pistons in this game.
Yeah. That's the line a lot. 12 free throw attempts, 11 made 11 of them. Yeah. So that'll do it. That'll get you some points
too. And the Bulls led by Chet Walker, Bob Love, and Clifford Ray. And there is no video of this game, and there's not really that much written about it that I could find. But there is there's a book called The Detroit Pistons: More Than Four Decades of Motor City Memories. And there's an excerpt from it that basically Jerry Sloan was out for the game for a foot injury, and Chet Walker ended up hitting a head fake 10-footer with 3 seconds left to pull the Bulls up ahead 96-94. And then after timeout, Dave Bing's inbound pass was tipped by Dennis Autry, and then and leading to the Pistons to lose a series. So this was like, we're going to, I think, get into this more in later shows. Kind of, we have a summer project coming up. We're going to be talking about the top 50 players ever. And this, I think this relates to that only in somewhat is that the Dave Bing, Bob Lanier Pistons were rarely good. This is really the
right,
season
right.
where they like kind of made the playoffs during that, basically that entire time. They had one weird year where they won like 50 games and didn't make it, or 49 games, maybe didn't make it. But for the most part, they were not a good team, but they were this year. And of course, we've mentioned the 70s Bulls before as kind of one of those, really good teams that, you know, just ran into, you know, Bucks and Lakers and so forth in a tough Western Conference in the early 70s.
Yeah, they're one that definitely fits into something that we, probably another summer project we might do is, you know, the lost dynasties or the dynasties that never were or whatever. And there's certainly one that you know, I wouldn't put them in the same level as those 80 bucks that were right there. But I mean, they numerous conference semifinals, numerous, you know, conference finals, you know, one that we'll talk, about on a later show or you know, just a really good team, a balanced team too. That's, I think, the thing that always sort of strikes me about that. And you see it in this box score too. You have, you know, four guys in double figures, including Norm Van Leer and the guys that you mentioned. But yeah, you get that a lot. It was with these teams that there wasn't really, you know, one of those big stars. It was, you know, it was Chet Walker putting in, you know, his amount, Bob Love putting in his amount, Jerry Sloan, obviously he's missing from this game, but he's one that comes up. But they're a really good balanced team that just never, as you said, could quite kind of get over the hump. And the one year they were supposed to get over the hump, and again, that'll be a game seven that we talk about in another podcast, the year when they were the favorites, they couldn't do it in the when it mattered. And yeah, but we'll talk about that one.
Are you still sad about that one?
And that was the Rick Warrior, the Rick Barry one as well.
Yes.
We talked about that in our first episode that we ever did about the Rick Barry Warriors. So
yeah. Good times, good memories for us. Not just for basketball, but memories of podcasts in the past.
Yeah, indeed. Yes, yeah. Yes.
So our next game is the Houston Rockets against the Phoenix Suns in 1995, 115-114. Kevin Johnson, 46 points, 10 assists, the game of his life. He's 21 of 21 on free throws, but he misses free throw number 22, and it comes back to haunt them, unfortunately.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, this is a fun game, and there's some videos on YouTube, and there's one I think that shows the entire fourth quarter of this, which I definitely recommend watching if you can. And anytime you can get like full, no matter what the game is, if there's ever like 10 straight minutes or 20 minutes of a game on YouTube, just watch it. I mean, come on, you don't get that often. Like NBA is not as good about, you know, having an archive, and God, I mean, who could blame them? They can't have every possible game ever up there. But you know, that would be something that's so awesome, just to watch older games, and I love doing that. And this one was a lot of fun. This is famous for, some people might know, you know, Mario Elie kind of, you know, broke out in this game. He had the famous kiss of death corner three. He, you know, hits the corner three with a few seconds left on the clock, you know, kisses to the crowd and kind of kisses to his teammates or whatever. And it's kind of an iconic moment as well. There's a great quote in this New York Times article of Hakeem Olajuwon said of Elie post game, "I told him he's a wicked man." So I love it.
So I mean, yeah, there's just some incredible performances here. Barkley also, he has 18 and 23 rebounds. Hakeem has 29 points. Drexler also has 29 points. You just some really good. Of course, this is the year the Rockets, they were the number six seed. They are coming off the championship year, and they kind of slumped that year. They have the midseason trade for Clyde Drexler, and they are shorthanded. They're underdogs in every series, and they manage to come through and eventually win the title. And I believe this is the sixth time they managed to not be eliminated in the playoffs in 2 years, which, you know, this is only the second round of 1995. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They had a tough run for most of these. And another interesting thing about this game as well, this is from the same New York Times article. And I think we've maybe made references to this as well, but this was essentially, everybody kind of assumed, Charles Barkley's swan song. And all the quotes are talking about, you know, he's done. Here's an excerpt, and this is actually the lead of the story, is his left knee creaks, his outside shot is flat, and his Phoenix Suns revolve around someone else. So Barkley announced late this afternoon that his retirement is imminent. He said all of this before, annually in fact, but today he went so far as to call a post-game meeting to tell his teammates they can have his locker. "I'm not saying this is 100% done, but I'll say more than likely I've played my last game. It's just time. It's just time. I can't see my skills getting better. I can only see them getting worse." He was right about the last part, but it wasn't time.
Yeah.
He was right about the skills getting worse, not so much that it was time, but pretty interesting that this was kind of the imminent, and then he would say, "You know what? I want to go to that team."
Yeah.
That team's kind
of
cool.
He did play one more year in Phoenix, and then he went to Houston, of course, and it didn't really work out. They were all kind of too old by then for it to for them to, make a good run. I mean, they had some deep playoff runs, but yeah, this was, I guess, pretty much the end of, you know, a Phoenix's window as a championship contender. They were 41-41 the next season. Paul Westphal only coached 33 games that year. And you could kind of tell there's a quote in there about like Paul Westphal, like having to tell, like he told Danny Ainge to tell Barkley that they were going to be running, you know, the offense through Kevin Johnson for like the entire second half, or they were going to be like clearing out and letting him go one-on-one. So that speaks to that.
Not a great relationship.
Exactly. You know, this was Danny Ainge's last year, I think, because he became the coach pretty soon after that.
Yes. I think it was the next year, right?
Or it was kind of Fitzsimmons, I think, the following year. I think he was GM first, then he eventually became coach.
Oh, right. I forgot the vaunted GM Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
He eventually settled into a nice GM role, but it's so weird. I mean, that's like, it seems to happen a lot in basketball too.
They go right from playing to,
whether it be coaching or and even like in baseball, there's a quick turnaround. Like right now, the majors are filled with ex-player, you know, coaches or whatever, and managers. But it tends to sort of be like a 1 or 2 year thing, and maybe they have to, you know, kind of be a third base coach or be a bench coach or whatever. Whereas NBA, it's like, no, you're good to go like right away. I mean, there's some guys, obviously, like a Cassell, like a Tyronn Lue or whatever, who are sort of biding their time. But it is pretty interesting how sometimes, and especially in past eras, it would be like, "You're done? Okay, how about being the GM of the team?" Okay, like, it's so weird. It's hard to think about, but it's the good old days. And this game is funny, too. Ainge plays a big role in this. He 2.1 seconds left. He's attempting to miss a free throw. But actually, it was kind of an interesting strategy. I thought I wanted to mention this as well. As the Rockets were up by three, they had a nice three-point lead. And what they kept doing, which is a great strategy that a lot of teams just don't employ all that much, and it seems to burn them a lot, is they were up by three. So what they did, they just didn't let the Suns take a shot. They just fouled them immediately and said, hey, you know, take two.
Yeah.
If you want to miss one on purpose, miss one on purpose and try to do it that way. But we're going to give you 2 points all the time you want. But we're going to, you know, and it was a great strategy because, you know, Dan Majerle comes up, he hits two. Again, they're still down by one. The Rockets come back, they score again, or they, you know, they get some free throws, and then Danny Ainge comes up and he's down, you know, with 3 points down, makes the first one, attempts to miss the second, and in true form of any time NBA players try to miss a free throw, he clangs it right off the backboard and it goes right in.
Sure.
So then they were able to steal the inbound attempt though. Danny Ainge grabs the inbound attempt and he heaves like a 30 footer, and it would have been awesome if he met it, but it was nowhere close. But It was really close. But yeah, I like that strategy. And some teams do that a lot and then others don't. Others kind of go with the risk of, we'll see if they can make it three. And it almost seems more times than not that happens, you know.
Yeah.
Famously, Ray Allen is engaged in a lot of those where they don't follow him and then he makes a three and then, you know, the end.
Yes. AC Green's prediction. premature, I would have to say.
A little, yes. After game four, he said he guaranteed victory. And to be fair, they were up, you know, 3-1 in the series. Sure. So I'll let him do that. But yeah, I mean, not bad. I mean, he played the percentages there. I'll let him slide there.
Yeah.
But his quote in this New York Times piece is great. He says, after game seven, he said, well, I have no words today. It didn't happen. I've never experienced it before. So now I have something else to describe in my next book. So that's
not the only thing that H.C. Green had ever experienced before.
Whoa.
Hey-o.
Book topics. That's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
I hope people give that enough credit. That was nice.
Yeah.
That was a nice segue there.
Thanks. speaking of new experiences, we have the Dallas Sex? Mavericks beating San Antonio Spurs in in a playoff series. The Dirk Nowitzki Mavericks.
Are you saying Dirk's a virgin? I'm not quite getting where you're going.
No, here. I mean, for the first time, Dirk is able to beat the Spurs.
Ah, got it. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Sorry, had a little,
it's all right.
A little trouble.
It's all right, Rich. You got to follow
it's
me.
Hard to keep up.
I know. It's just rapid, you know, rapid fire. this was kind of one that I missed. I missed the Rockets Suns one just because I forgot to put an asterisk next to it in my coding. But I kind of forgotten about this series, and then the scoring margin. It's 119-111, but it's an overtime. But yeah, it really was. I mean, this is really.
It doesn't reflect the game.
Yeah, I mean,
at all.
It's one of the great series of all time, and really a tremendous game seven. I mean, five out of the seven games in the series were decided in the last minute, including this one, which went to overtime. Dirk had 37 points and 15 rebounds. Duncan had 41 points and 15 rebounds. So just, you know, incredible performances by the stars and good supporting roles as well. Jason Terry, 27 points. Parker at 24. Ginobili at 23. So the guys you would expect all delivered, but delivered in a good way. In the fourth corner, Jean Ajap actually played really good defense against Tim Duncan, basically kind of keeping him from making some close shots and really preventing the Spurs from being able to come back and win the game.
Yeah, he actually had a really good game, Jop. And you see one of the famous highlights, too, is him, you know, kind of tipping a rebound away from Duncan. Duncan keeps trying to get this rebound, and Jop, and it goes on for like 30 seconds. not 30 seconds, but, you know, it's just like this tip above Duncan's head, and Duncan just keeps trying to get it, and Jop just does not let it, go down, and it's a great. I mean, they one of the big things I think in the key of this game as well, and if you watch the highlights, is that Dallas is getting contributions from a lot of guys. Obviously, you know, led by Dirk, led by Jason Terry, as you mentioned. Josh Howard throws in 18 points. Jerry Stackhouse off the bench gets 13. Jop, as I mentioned, he had 7 points and 4 rebounds in just 10 minutes. So we had a really good production. Whereas the Spurs, you know, surprisingly enough, it was the big three. It was Duncan, you know, Parker and Ginobili, and then nothing else. The bench did little to nothing, like absolutely. I mean, as close to nothing as you can get. Robert Horry had 2 points off the bench, and that was it. That was their only bench contribution points wise. So that's very, very interesting there. And that was Pop just riding his five guys for, you know, almost 40 minutes for all those guys. Whereas as Dallas was able to have a much deeper bench and get a lot of guys in there, and it showed. They were able to kind of have, you know, especially in overtime, you saw that where the Spurs really, really looked like they were just blown out and just tired, that they just couldn't handle it anymore. Whereas, you know, the Mavericks were fresh. So it's very interesting here. And this was a big game for Dirk, a big game for the Dallas Mavericks franchise, because it was beating the Spurs. It was getting the monkey off their back, and it was, you know, getting to the next round of the playoffs, which was a big thing. And knowing that, hey, we don't have to beat the Spurs to get to the NBA Finals. We have to beat, you know, the Suns or the Clippers. It ended up being the Suns, and they were able to do it. So it was a very interesting thing. But Dirk really needed that, especially because there was obviously questions about, you know, Dirk's, you know, now it seems kind of silly because we sort of know, but in 2006 it wasn't. There was a guy who didn't play defense, didn't win big games. His teams didn't win all that much, where, you know, he was able to finally do this. And after the game, in a quote, you know, Mark Cuban comes up and he says, "Did you see that? It just ran out of my door. That monkey that's been on our back for so long, it's gone." Right. And, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, the Mavericks were a little bit of like a clown show before this. I mean, they were just, you know, there was the stereotypes of them just being, you know, all offense and all defense, which was somewhat true and somewhat not true. But, you know, and Dirk was this, you know, guy who could shoot jumpers, but wasn't really willing to, you know, do the dirty work as much, or that was at least the stereotype. And then, you know, 05, 06, they started, you know, they started changing their identity, and Dirk got stronger and started really, you know, going to the basket even more and just, you know, being able to do more and, you know, fulfilling his talent as he was, you know, in his prime years and just, you know, playing an amazing way. And it's just sort of, it's not like entirely the same, but it is not entirely different, I think, from something like, you know, Wilt finally overcoming Russell in 1967, or even Jordan, you know, finally overcoming the Pistons. I mean, that kind of thing where, you know, these, you know, you finally, are able to, you know, kind of overcome that obstacle, and you sort of get that, you know, credibility, for lack of a better term, after you do that. And this, I guess, was the third time that 260 win teams had met in a game seven in NBA history.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah. And I don't know if we mentioned it, you know, when we were talking about it as well, but this was a huge, the Mavericks went out to a huge lead at the beginning of the game, and the Spurs came back. So that makes the game even better. And that's another one that, you know, it sucks that we sort of missed it, but that's going to kind of happen, is that, yeah, you have a game where the Mavericks pretty much have it in the hand. It's like, cool, we're finally going to beat those Spurs and those vaunted Spurs and the monkeys off our back. And then, oh crap. Like, imagine if they had lost that game, of like, just what would have happened, what would have been so different about the Mavericks franchise, would have been different about Dirk, all that sort of stuff. Obviously they get to the finals, you know, in the series because of it. But yeah, I mean, you lose in the first round again and you're up 20 and you lose in the game seven. I mean, man, that'd be something else, especially with Tim Duncan having as good of a game as he had. You know, it would sort of be that okay, well, there's a real player, and then Dirk's just kind of this other guy, you know what I mean? That would sort of, I feel, be the narrative around it. But we didn't get that.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, and this was also in San Antonio, I don't think we mentioned, which is, yeah, obviously, right. Yeah, I mean, pulling that off on the road against, you know, a team that had accomplished what San Antonio already had, you know, three championships at that point, and, you know, they were a 63 win team. So so, you know, just great stuff, great series.
Yeah, and
one of the best, you know, as far as total series, it's, you know, it's up there. I mean, with, you know, five games are, you know, that close, and, you know, the stakes that were there, it's definitely
and the stories too, and that's one of always the fun thing, and it's especially what we're going to talk about now. You know, this year's series or whatever, the stories that you can get in a game, and if you can do that and just weave stories into that, it makes it all that much better than just being a great game. And that this was just a great game, but there was so many different storylines in here, and I think that segues perfectly into, you know, the Spurs Clippers from this year, which is just that when that game was over, man, I needed a cigarette. I don't smoke at all, but it was just like, it felt, I don't know if you felt this way too, it felt like a really long game, but long in a good way.
Yes.
Like, there felt like there was so many like roller coasters, and there's so much ebb and flow, and like, these people are, you know, the Spurs have the run, and now the Clippers have a run. Now the Spurs, and when it was over, I was like, man, that game was like 5 hours long, but it was, and in a good way, absolutely. It was like, I didn't want it to end either. Wanted to just go on forever, because there was just so much in there that was just incredible.
Your fiance wanted it to end, but you did not want it.
Yeah, she was ready for it to end. I was like, oh, you hit the shot. Damn it. All right, let's go.
Yeah.
fine, let's go eat.
Yeah, so the Clippers won this game 111-109, and really, really gutsy performance by Chris Paul, who, of course, had a hamstring injury, but managed to have 27 points playing in 37 minutes. Blake Griffin, 24 points, 13 rebounds, 10 assists. Matt Barnes, contributing a lot as well. And Jamal Crawford, DeAndre Jordan. Actually, DeAndre didn't play all that well. I guess he did have 14 rebounds. But, you know, they just managed, even though there are very much not a deep team, they managed to some, and they were, of course, missing Chris Paul for a decent amount of the game. They managed to somehow, you know, keep them into the game. And, I mean, Blake's really, I thought was really impressive here. And it's going to be kind of like overlooked because of just, you know, the story of Chris Paul overcoming that hamstring injury and hitting the game winning shot with one second on the clock, which I guess is the first game seven that ever to win with a game winning shot with 1 second or less on the clock, which is pretty amazing. Oh.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, yeah, and yeah, that's
yeah.
You kind of think it would happen more, but I guess, you know, in our research, especially with this, we're finding out, you know, we kind of think of game sevens as something that, but they don't really happen all that much. Like, it's hard.
It's really hard to find a lot of dramatic ones, but they're, yeah, with 1 second lead is right at that last, you know, that last game winning shot. It just, yeah, it doesn't, I mean, there are game winning shots with 4 seconds or 11 seconds or whatever, but yeah, just with 1 second left, it's funny how that has never quite happened that way.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan was great too. You know, 27 and 11. I mean, you know, at 39 years old, of course.
It's just it's insane. Like, it's just ridiculous what he can do at his age. And it's just, you know, anytime you think, oh, Duncan's sort of slowing down, or he's looking, and then you know, you see games like this, and of course those games are few and far between as much. Or, I mean, I shouldn't say as much, but I mean, man, he's still like, that was just classic Duncan. And no, he's not, you know, what he was, and you know, even that 2006 series that we just talked about, man, he's still so good, and like he really does look like he can do it for like. Like you said, it's almost a decade ago, and like he's still like, he just screams to me like a guy who, even like he's 56, can probably still like put 12, probably get like 12 and 10, right? Like just doesn't run down the court, doesn't really care. Just
sure,
I feel like he could do that. Like, he should try that. He should just never retire.
We'll see. You know, I loved, of course, the Chris Paul 3-pointer at the end of the third quarter, right after I'm sorry, I'm blanking. Doc Rivers' son.
Yes, Austin.
Yes, thank you. Austin Rivers hit the
he's easy to forget, or you want to forget.
Dumb foul on Ginobili. Well, I mean, Ginobili just tricked him, but it was obviously very late where he managed to get a really silly shooting foul when he's like behind half court and got the three foul shots, only made two, and then Chris Paul just grabs the rebound and just, you know, dribbles on back and just hit, you know, just guns a a 3-point, probably like a 30-foot 3-pointer or whatever, and just, you know, banks right in at the right in the quarter. Everyone's crazy. It took what like could have been like what could have felt like a, you know, like a just a thing that gets you down, it just got the team and the crowd back up and, you know, led to a great fourth quarter.
And that's what I mean, like, just like a magical game is like something like that happens. And that's how you, like, you almost, because I rent and rewatch the game afterwards, and just like seeing that and knowing, you know, kind of what's coming forward, it just seems like so like that. That's just prophecy. Like, you knew that had to be an incredible game after something like that happened, where just you get that instant karma of like, oh, what a terrible play. Oh, wait, never mind. It led to like a great play like that. And that's just like one of the many, many, many storylines and layers and stuff that you got here. But yeah, I think you mentioned a little bit, and I think it's worth mentioning again, is just that the maturation of a Blake Griffin, and just to see what he had sort of become, and what, you know, we sort of all maybe unfairly kind of still think of Blake Griffin. And you watch this game and it's just like, man, that's another guy who just is evolving and is turning into a really, really solid player. And this game especially, I thought was really a microcosm of how much different he is than what we sort of assume as the guy who just kind of, you know, Chris Paul throws an alley-oop and he throws it. I mean, he's so much more than that.
Yeah,
so
I mean, he can score from,
like, that's a part of his game, but it's not his game at all anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he reminds me a little bit of like a more powerful Dominique Wilkins, where like Dominique was more graceful and Blake's more of like, you know, compact and more and strong. But like, I feel like the way they score is kind of is similar. You know, Blake's just as good of a jump shooter now, almost, maybe not quite as good, but you know, he can kind of score from anywhere. He's got the great dunks. He's probably a better passer. He's definitely a better passer. He's probably a better defender than Dominique. I don't know if he's a better overall player, but I just like I feel like that. I kind of see the way he plays. I feel like I see Dominique in him a little bit, even though on the surface they're very different players. But yeah, I mean, his passing is just incredible. He's really fun to watch. He might be my favorite player to watch right now.
He's growing on my list as well. Yeah, it's just there's there's just something about it, yeah. And you're not quite sure what he's going to do on every possession because right. he has, you know, a few different weapons and he has just kind of wildly different things. Like, he can either throw down, like, the best alley-oop you've ever seen or just make, like, a crisp, like, 18-footer. And, like, it's just so weird. Like, yeah. you just don't get that very often from guys. You know, it's great.
So this is going to be interesting to see how this, you know, in history, in basketball history, kind of where this is going to be remembered, because it's going to depend on two things. It's going to depend on how far the Clippers go in the playoffs, and it's also going to depend on who ends up leaving the Spurs in the offseason. My thought is it's probably unlikely that Duncan and Popovich are going to leave. I mean, if they did leave and this was their final game, then this would obviously be tremendously historically important. If it's just Ginobili leaving, I mean, that's certainly noteworthy, but less so. And I guess, like, you know, if the Clippers make the finals or the conference finals, then I think this, you know, gets more shine. If they lose to Houston in the second round, then mm-hmm. it's a little bit like, you know, it's still Chris Paul not getting out of the second round, which is, you know, unfair, which we've talked about being unfair. But, you know, that's going to be kind of
sure.
It's, you know, a lot of these games that we talk about, you know, they're important for, you know, obviously the games are exciting and, you know, they're important for those reasons, but they're also important because they're part of a larger story.
Right, exactly. Like that last series that we talked about, you know, Mavericks or whatever, if they just lose to the Suns, you know, in four games, then, you know, it's not the monkey off the back. It's like, oh, shit, yeah. well, the monkey's still kind of there. Or you know, you just beat the Spurs yeah. or whatever. Or you know,
or if the Mavericks are never that good again, you know, if they never
right,
are
yeah,
a title contender, if they never win a championship, it doesn't mean that much, you know. So, exactly.
So, yeah, it will have to play out a little bit. I think one of the things that people are definitely going to remember is, or at least forget, is that this is a first round series. Like, it's just these right. two teams, these two guys, it's going to be just so wild. And especially if playoff reform ever happens, it'll be one of those things where people are like, really? At one point, like, these guys are in the first round. It's like, yeah, it's going to, you know, that's what happened. Like, in 20 years when it's so weird that there's like these two great teams that have to play each other in the first round or whatever, it's and that might still happen or again, but I wonder if that will sort of be a thing that people will kind of go, wait a minute, whoa, really, the first round? Like,
right,
like yeah. there's no way these two teams were in the first round. And sure. It's true, but what a world we live in.
What a world.
And it might be the end of Hekka, whatever.
Yeah,
Hekka XXXX.
Yeah, Hekka Shaq. So. Yeah, and or yeah, Hekka DeAndre, whatever. It might be, and you might.
I kind of hope
might
so.
Be the end of divisions or the end of you know, playoff. Seeding by divisions. I mean, that might be the end of that too. So, you know,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is the best game I think I've seen since, you know, game six of the 2013 Heat Spurs finals.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would, yeah, I mean, can't
there
think of
some great regular season games.
Yeah.
And there were some good playoff games, some good playoff
Nothing
series last year, but I don't
enough,
think anything
no.
that, you know, rose up to this. So,
no, absolutely not. No, and even before that, yeah. I mean, it's hard to get one of those iconic. And this is one that, I mean, we had to, you know, put this onto our list immediately. And that's how you can tell. Yeah. It was one that when it was over, everybody was just kind of in agreement that, oh my God, we just watched something really special. Like just all across, you know, Twitter. And I had friends. I had everybody that was just like, well, that was special. So,
right.
And the players knew it too. You could tell from the post game, you know, talk as well. And you know, quotes from the guys coming out that they all knew that this was just special.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a decent chance that three of the games that we talked about, the last three games that we talked about on this on here, would have made our list, you know, had the one been played and had the two that we examined closely, because they are that great. And, you know, and they do have those noteworthy performances, but there's so many other great ones. It's obviously challenging to make that decision. So that's why we did two shows.
Exactly. Yeah. And there it is. So.
All right. Everyone, do you have anything else, Rich?
That is it for me.
All right. Everyone can, of course, check out the Over and Back NBA podcast at thepodiumgame.com. We're part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network, which you can find on iTunes. We would love a rating and review if you want to give that to us. You can find us also at Facebook at Over and Back NBA and also Twitter at Over and Back NBA. We would love any feedback you want to give us. Constructive criticism is fine, too, but we like nice things. So, and that's about it. Rich, great to do another show with you.
Absolutely.
All right. And we'll be back with some more Game 7 talk pretty soon.